You are listening to The Link, an interactive podcast hosted by public policy experts at the U.S. Oncology Network. Your link to the policy that matters most.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Link podcast, linking your practice to policy. Again, my name is J.C. Cardenas, and I'm the Associate Director for Federal Government Relations with the U.S. Oncology Network based in Washington, D.C. And this afternoon, I'm joined by Dr. Susan Escudier of Texas Oncology. Dr. Escudier, you want to talk a little bit about why you're here and your position at Texas Oncology?
Sure. Thanks for having me, JC. So I am a medical oncologist. I practice in Houston, where I'm also the regional medical director for the Gulf Coast of Texas Oncology. But my talk here today at the meeting is related to my role as a vice president for value-based care and quality programs.
Yeah. And so I know the meeting structure is a little bit different in terms of now we're the afternoon session of today. They're doing these little TED Talks in 10, 15 minutes. So tell me a little bit more about what you guys were able to discuss during your talk and how you guys are working on the value-based program.
So one of the asks from our government programs, but also increasingly from our private payers, is that we address the social determinants of health or non-medical determinants of health. And what's happened is over the years, medicine has become much more aware of the fact that patient outcomes are greatly determined on their ability to access care and other factors such as lack of transportation, lack of education, living in a food desert, living in a medical desert, things like that, that can affect a patient's outcome even more than their actual stage of cancer.
Yeah. And so I know you, Texas Oncology has been obviously in the value-based care, really one of the big players, and you guys are a part of the new enhancing oncology care model. How has that sort of played into all of this together, combined into that all of that?
Well, the predecessor program, which was the oncology care model, was mostly about controlling costs and improving or sort of standardizing the quality of care. The ask for the enhancing oncology model was that we begin to gather demographic data about our patients and determine what their needs are. And lo and behold, when we asked, there were a lot more needs than we ever anticipated, so much so that our social workers had their workload like quadrupled.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so tell me a little bit more. I know, so that is one of the big values of being a part of the network and the value that Texas Oncology adds. But how was the network able to help you guys utilize those programs and utilize the value of that?
Well, they have provided us with access to a couple of really useful programs. And of course, they're also really great at investigating these things and telling us how to do it. So for example, what tool are we going to use to measure this? And how are we going to incorporate it into our EMR? And so we are using the NCCN distress thermometer, which most of us were already familiar with. And that transition has been, I'd say, relatively painless in terms of our ability to use it. They have provided us with Find Help, which is an online resource that helps us identify resources for our patients where they are. So with this, you can type in a zip code and you can find out where the nearest food bank is. Where can you get utility assistance or rent assistance? So things that we know our patients need, but we can't provide.
Yeah.
But now we have a better able to tell them where to find it. And that's been a great tool. And then also, U.S. Oncology has provided us with sort of a backup remote social work and triage and things like that that have enabled us to do more for our patients than we could do in our individual offices.
No, yeah, that's really awesome. And I think especially for patients, that really is that goes beyond the care that we're delivering. It's just the extra step that we're doing just to ensure that patients are solely focused on getting better and they have these other tools allowed to them. And especially on the policy side, from us on the federal, in the federal perspective, that is just one of the things that we advocate for on behalf of the network and on behalf of Texas Oncology and the practices when we're meeting with members of Congress, letting them know the value of community oncology care and the value that you guys bring to your patients. And so What other tools can, if another practice is out there, you know, trying to get more invested in the value-based care that they already are starting or, you know, barely building it out, where could they learn some more? Who could they reach out to?
Well, I think that Stuart and his team have been invaluable, and Leyland Wilfong, at basically sort of analyzing these programs and taking a really detailed look at our practice's past performance and helping us to predict what our future performance is. And that's key because you don't get a practice to buy into a multi-million dollar project without knowing that your practice will come out better on the other side of it. And so that's been huge. I don't think we could do any of it without the analytics that we get from McKesson and US Oncology.
Awesome. Yeah, because I know, especially with the new enhancing oncology model, there's a lot more burden and a lot more risk involved with a lot of the practices.
There is. And so what they did, and I, at the risk of sounding cynical, it's a typical government program in that they said oncology care model didn't really do what we wanted it to. It didn't really save Medicare enough money. So we're going to make a smaller program, more focused, but we're going to pay you less and ask you to do more.
Yeah.
And we said, great, sign us up because we have these resources that are going to enable us to do well.
Yeah. And I think ultimately from the policy perspective, you know, we've been engaged with CMS on the issue. We've had the CMMI director, Liz Fowler, out to Texas Oncology there in San Antonio, which she hadn't been with because we know Texas Oncology is one of the larger partners in the program. And I know she was taken blown away about the work that you guys do and the breadth that Texas Oncology is able to offer patients. And so we're hoping to continue engaging with them, and we appreciate you guys giving us feedback for whenever we need to submit comments or whenever CMS is looking for feedback on those types of things. So I know we're still fully engaged with them as they, you know, look to continue rolling out the program. Taking a little bit of a pivot here, you were able to join us 2 weeks ago in Houston for the Houston Rodeo. The U.S. Oncology Network was proud to, the U.S. Oncology Network PAC was happy to support the House Majority PAC in Houston, where we had a lot of the Democratic leadership of the House Democratic Caucus in Houston. Were you able to meet several of those members? What was that experience like, and how was that?
It was really fantastic. And I really appreciate everything our legislative affairs folks do and our PAC does, because some of my physicians will ask me, and I might have asked back in the day, what does this mean to me? Why do I need to do it? Well, because otherwise, the only voices they're hearing are pharma, hospitals, and big academic centers.
Yep.
So it's critical that our elected representatives understand the power and the value of community oncology. Mm-hmm. And so this was a tremendous experience. I really enjoyed getting to meet these folks. And, you know, not to say that we're going to change the laws, but now they know who we are.
Yeah.
And so now when they have a question in their district, they can say, hey, how does this affect my constituents, your patients?
Yeah, exactly. And I think for us, Lisa Langender, who leads our team on the federal side, and myself, for us, we're interacting with a lot of these members. But when they're able to put a face to the name of this is the U.S. Oncology Network, this is Texas Oncology, the practices, when you guys are able to meet them, that just adds another layer to the work that they're doing. And it shows that you guys are making the investment of, you know, we want to be at the table, not on the menu, as Dr. Pat always says.
Right.
And so we were glad that you were able to join us. And it was a really great event. We got to meet with Leader Jeffries, along with Pete Aguilar and Ted Lieu, who's the vice chair of the Dem Caucus, and also Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, and several members of the Democratic Caucus, where it really does put a value on us being able to be in that room with them.
And they were able to share, for example, that they had family members that had been under cancer care with some of our practices, which was really, really great to hear. And I think what's great to me about this is that, quite honestly, you guys do all the work and we show up. And I just want to encourage my my physician colleagues, my practice colleagues, that what they want from us is our stories.
Yes.
I mean, sure, they'll take some money.
Yeah.
Sure, they'll take your vote. But what they need, what they want, what our patients need and want is for us to tell their stories,
yeah.
for us to tell the stories of why our patient couldn't get the medication he or she needed, how our patient had their insurance deny their treatments, you know, and how and our successes that if we can, for example, dispense our own drugs, it's that much easier for our patients to stay in their own community and stay with their families and go back to work and do what's important.
Yeah. And so we thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, especially on the value-based care side, but also at Texas Oncology with all the patients and just for being a great advocate. I mean, being able to have you guys come out and, you know, take time from your weekend to come and join. I know it was still a fun event to be at the rodeo, but, you know, it's still, you know, some sort of work to be there and say hi. But we were glad that you were able to join us and along with several of the other colleagues from Texas Oncology. And so that really helps make my job a lot easier. So I just wanted to thank you. And just thank you again. I know it's a tight, busy day today, and you did a great, amazing job with your presentation. What was it like walking through that LED door? How was that? Was that your first time?
I was really excited to get to walk through the light wall. And I was going to make a joke about it, but everyone did that last year. And this year, no one seemed to be doing it. But I found it pretty exciting to walk
through. I feel like that's just like one of the bucket lists for every attendee who comes. It's like, how do I get invited to be a speaker so I can go through the wall?
And next time I want to be able to choose my own walk-on music.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That is something that we'll add to the survey. So thank you, Dr. Escudero, so much for joining us and stopping by and sharing a little bit about your talk. And hopefully we'll get to see you at other future events. So thank you so much.
Right. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the LINC podcast, your link to the legislature. For more information on healthcare policy and the U.S. Oncology Network, visit www.legislink.com.
Thanks for joining us for The Link, linking your practice to policy. We are live on set for the podcast today at the U.S. Oncology Network annual meeting in lovely Indianapolis, Indiana. It's a little chilly outside, but it feels good in here. Today, we are joined by J.C. Cardenas, the Associate Director for Federal Government Relations, Lisa Langendorfer, Senior Director of Federal Government Relations, and Dr. Gary Doshi. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, team. Pleasure to be here.
JC, you have been working with Dr. Doshi on a number of issues. Can you help talk to us about some of the more pressing ones with some late-breaking updates?
Yeah, so Dr. Doshi has really been instrumental on helping us do a lot of Hill meetings on this very important issue of the medically integrated dispensing home delivery issue, where many of our practices know CMS revoked our ability to mail prescriptions to their patients. And so we've been taking to the Hill. There is a piece of legislation that's been discussed in Congress, H.R. 5526, the Seniors Access to Critical Medications Act, which would once again allow practices to mail their prescriptions to their patients. And so Dr. Doshi, along with Dr. Deborah Pat, has been helping join a lot of virtual Hill meetings with several of Energy and Commerce members. And I'm excited to report that today the bill has actually passed the subcommittee. And the very first big step of hopefully getting that bill to the floor and moving forward. And so, Dr. Doshi, you want to talk a little bit about some of those meetings and the experience you had doing those?
Yes, it was really wonderful, JC, to have you set up those meetings with different congressional leadership and their aides so that we could really talk to the issue of why it's so important for our practices, MID, which is medically integrated dispensing, pharmacies to be able to ship medicines out, their cancer medicines for our patients, and to be able to ship them out to the patients' homes. You know, medically integrated dispensing is a completely unique way of taking care of our cancer patients. And originally, even when the Stark Law was devised, legislators admitted that they weren't really aware of how we treat cancer patients in 2023 and 2024. You know, one third of our cancer therapies are in the oral formulation. So this is really important for us to be able to continue to take care of our cancer patients. And as is the pillar of all of our practices in the U.S. Oncology Network, it's important for us to be able to take care of our patients close to home. So part of our medically integrated dispensing team, the whole foundational way that we take care of patients is relevant here. We are part of having a complete team of people that take care of our patients. So we have our pharmacists, our pharmacy techs, our nurses, our APPs, and our doctors seeing these patients, putting together their care plan, and then being able to start them on therapy and then continue their care. And they're able to get their medicines at the convenience of their own home. And that's really, really vital to taking care of patients in a community setting.
No, yeah, definitely. And I think the work that you did and studying the impact to the Medicare patients in Texas was really instrumental in shining a light on the issue and the impact to the patients Texas Oncology sees. And I know a lot of those meetings with the staff, we were able to follow up and send them that study. And I think it was really eye-opening about the number and the impact to that, especially because this was something that our practices were able to do prior to this FAQ coming out from CMS last year.
So the meetings that you arrange allow us to talk to legislators and their aides and really inform them about these issues. And I think that that dialogue, both sides of the aisle, right? It's about informing, educating, walking them through our experience so that they can really understand what's at stake and how we best take care of patients.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned that today it's about one third of patients. What do you think that number is 5 years from now?
So it's going to be about 40% of all therapies are going to be oral in nature or a combination of oral and intravenous or subcute therapies. So cancer care is complex, and we continue to pride ourselves in being the most convenient, caring option and really delivering personalized care. So this is going to continue to be a very, very important part of taking care of patients.
So in 5 years, we will be encroaching on half of the patients that if CMS does not rescind or retract this new interpretation, will be forced into more fragmented care.
That's
right.
At a
time when we're trying to reach more personalized treatments. Is that right?
That is absolutely right.
And that was one of the major talking points today from a lot of members during the hearing was they were talking about this movement towards more oral oncolytics and being able to just get that access from the community oncology.
And here we make a distinction because, you know, the bill as it would read, you know, with the stark changes in the FAQ, it's still Medicare allowed for specialty pharmacies, right, to still be able to mail out prescriptions. But the distinction here is really important because specialty pharmacies don't know the patient. They do not care for that patient. And so they don't understand what is going on, diagnosis, comorbidities, where they are in their treatment, and the dose adjustments. This is really important. You know, it's not about just sending medication out to the patient. It's about having the right dose, the right drug at the right time. And so when we have specialty pharmacies doing this, they drive up the cost of care. They drive up waste, and there's a lot of waste, and that drives up the total cost of care. And so that's why it's such an important part of legislation to be able to continue to have MIDs serve their patients.
Absolutely. Yeah, this has been frustrating. And it wasn't only a lack of action on the Hill, although that has been obviously a big source of concern, although today's news is a welcomed update. But coming from CMS, I know you were with us when we met with CMS on this a year ago, Lisa, is that right? Almost
yes,
a year
just
ago.
Just before the end of the public health emergency.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So a year ago, and we were trying to make the case then that an FAQ that was drafted in a silo that was focused on intermittent catheters shouldn't arbitrarily just loop in a growing piece of oncology care through the mailing of oral medications that require the close monitoring and dose adjustments. It's fascinating. Talk us through how you saw. I know we've talked a little bit about this in the past on, I think, another episode of the podcast. But given what JC updated us on now in Congress, Can we think back about how CMS reacted to this and how, what was your impression coming out of that? And our hope was that they would correct this, but now Congress is kind of coming in saying, maybe if they pass this bill, you have to correct this.
So I think that, and I'm not really an expert on CMS and how they look at things, but it did seem to me through our conversations with them that really, Ben, I don't think that they completely knew and had the background of really how this was going to impact. So I think when they did, they answered FAQs to answer, like you said, certain aspects of healthcare, like intermittent catheters and delivery of catheters. But healthcare is complex, and I don't think they really understood the impact that they would have on cancer patients. Maybe you all want to talk about energy and commerce and the testimony there, and really having the deputy administrator. JC, do you want to add some clarity for our listeners in terms of when CMS was asked that question in detail, what they were saying in the testimony?
Before we do that, why don't we take a step back? Because I know we did have the CMMI director out to Texas Oncology in San Antonio, which I know Lisa was there. I don't know if you want to set the stage a little bit about how that went and then into today's proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for everyone listening, right, we've really had a multi-pronged effort to push back against this thing. We took the administrative route by meeting with CMS. We took that a step further and worked with our value-based care team to host a site visit at Texas Oncology San Antonio with CMMI Director Liz Fowler to come out. And we made that a key argument when it comes to the implementation of EOM, that this, the ability to mail drugs to our patients, to maintain that relationship with our patients, is a critical component of value-based care and our ability to both establish that relationship with the patient and maintain it, but also it gives physicians another tool in the toolbox to manage their care and look for ways to reduce costs where possible. And that was ultimately a very positive meeting with Director Fowler as well. It seems like this, from a clinical perspective, seems very common sense, you know, both in Congress and, at, you know, and for those, for example, within the value-based care team at CMS.
I want to just comment on that for our listeners, especially, you know, providers in the network and everyone involved in the network. You bring up a good point that what we do, we know what we do every day. So it seems like common sense. But what I've learned by working with your team is really that, you know, our legislators, CMS, they deal with a variety of issues, right? And they're trying to do serve out their mission. But for them to take time, so the best thing that our team does is get us time in front of, you know, different legislators, get us time in front of CMS staff so that we can speak to them about what we know day in and day out, which is taking care of cancer patients. So I just want to pause because I think that's an important point that I want all of our listeners to know, is that when we have that opportunity to speak about what we know, our expertise, we should always take that opportunity to help them understand what we do day in and day out.
I completely agree. I would go one step further and say our team, which we have a fantastic team, but we're nothing without people like you, the experts to come in that are seeing patients on the ground. That's what they need to hear. They need to hear from you. So thank you for being engaged in this, because that is absolutely critical in any success that we have.
And especially with the busy schedules that you guys have, being able to take, you know, 15, 20 minutes to join us for a meeting and do a virtual meeting, that is, we really thank you for taking that time, because I know you guys are, you know, seeing patients and doing all sorts of other things at your practice. And it's just, I know there's a lot going on too, especially with your schedule. So really appreciate it.
Well, I thank y'all for really garnering the support and getting the attention of our legislators. I mean, they're packed. Their legislative aides only have a certain number of hours in the day as well. So the fact that, you know, we are such an impactful group that you guys can get their attention and get us that dedicated time makes a big difference.
Well, and Dr. Doshi, you're not just giving up some time during the clinic. You also gave up a weekend recently to help the cause.
Yeah. So pivoting into that, this past couple, 2 weeks ago, Dr. Doshi was able to join us in the Houston Rodeo. The U.S. Oncology Network PAC was supporting the House Majority PAC at the Houston Rodeo for a big weekend event, with one of the very few times where the entire Democratic leadership was in town at one event and one one venue, and you were able to join us for that. What was that experience like, and who did you get to meet, and what was one of your takeaways?
Well, I enjoyed our time. I had my colleagues, Dr. Susan Escadir, Dr. Deborah Pat with us, and JC, you were serving as our host, and that was fantastic. I mean, I had never met leader Jeffrey, so that was the highlight, obviously. And just to have so many people in the room with us, we had...
You had the New Mexico governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, Democratic Chair Pete Aguilar, Vice Chair Ted Lieu of California, Henry Cuellar of Texas, Sylvia Garcia of Texas, Nanette Barragan of Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, also of Florida. I said Nanette Barragan, she's from California, sorry. She's going to get mad at me when she hears this, if she ever does. But a congresswoman from California, and a couple of others, but mostly the entire Democratic leadership, including Catherine Clark, the whip, where you guys got to meet them and talk to them. And I go to those offices a lot and talk to them and let them know who we are. But when they get to put a face to the name,
that's exactly what I was going to say, is I think that our presence there really was putting a face to the name, standing side by side with you and really explaining who we were and the role we serve. And then really interestingly, you know, if you meet enough people, people will have either family members of their or their own friends that have been treated by a physician in the network. And so one of the congressional leaders' family members were treated with by one of our RMCC physicians. So in Colorado. And so they had positive stories to tell. And that's always a wonderful Absolutely. Moment to connect.
Absolutely. All right. More importantly, before we move off of the rodeo, how was the concert?
Yeah, the concert was good. The rodeo, I have to say, it was nice. We really had a great view being in the Champions Club and never been there before. So it was nice. It was wonderful to really break bread. I think all of the leadership was really appreciative. Democratic leadership did spend a lot of time up there. Right. And so, you know, it's nice to bond over biscuit and beers and watch the rodeo.
That's a good combo.
Yeah.
I will say the physicians were rock stars. All the members were just coming up and just saying hi and meeting everybody and taking a couple pictures. And it was a lot of fun being able to be there and see the rodeo. And then the post-concert was Hardy, who I had never heard of before, but definitely put on a good show. It was a lot of fun.
It was fun being in Texas and Texas Oncology. They know we had locations all the way down from the valley up to north of Dallas. And so, we spread east to west to El Paso. So it's always nice to be well represented there.
And so we definitely appreciate all the help Texas Oncology has given to the PAC and the support that you guys have given. So we were greatly appreciative. You guys were able to join us and partake in that and meet with several of the members.
Great. Thank you. That should probably just wrap it up. I think everyone is leaving the conference and we're starting to see folks trickle out. So, Dr. Doshi, thank you very much for joining us for The Link.
Thank you.
Linking your practice to policy. As always, the views and opinions expressed in this episode are those of ours and ours alone.
Thank you for listening to The Link Podcast, your link to the legislature. For more information on healthcare policy and the U.S. Oncology Network, visit www.legislink.com.